So it's my pleasure to introduce Kamina Galati for this presentation here at Many Rivers Books and Tea on Self-Care Practices for the Heart. Of course, we love to have presentations related to holidays, and 2 days from today, go ahead and have a seat. Valentine's Day coming up means that people will be thinking about Valentine's issues, and this topic of, well, there are a lot, come on, there
no,
are lots
I
of issues.
I totally agree, I like
there that. Are lots of issues. So we've had, you know, psychotherapy talks about Valentine's Day, we had a number, but this is a new one for us, Ayurveda and yoga, and I'm excited to hear what Kamina has to say. She was a participant in the Festival of Conscious Parenting last year. We hope we'll get her to work with the now slightly renamed Conscious Family Festival this year, and I am delighted to welcome, and please join me in welcoming Kamina Galati to Many Rivers Books and Tea.
So, I think it was last May that I was here with, and we gave a talk on Yoga Nidra, and it was right after that we decided to do another one, so this date has been set for a really long time, and there is a lot going on with love this time of year, and something that Ayurveda really thrives in is self-care. And so it kind of goes hand in hand to talk about self-care practices at this time of year. So also having the Dhyana Center in town, I think there's more awareness about Ayurveda, and they call their yoga studio and kind of a spa self-care studio and body temple. So this language is kind of being thrown around a lot in town. So just curious if you guys know about Ayurveda. I was going to go over some kind of basic fundamental principles of it, and then we'll go into some actual practices for the heart, and then we'll do a little meditation and work with some essential oils and just bringing in kind of all the senses and working around the heart. So have you guys heard of Ayurveda before? Yes, some have, some haven't. Awesome. So I'll just give a kind of brief overview. It's a huge science. It's like yoga. It's a sister science to yoga. And Ayus means life, and then Veda is study or knowledge. So it's known as the study or science of life. So you can imagine it's pretty vast. And it's kind of described as the healing side of yoga. So it's a whole system based on herbs and body therapies, diet, lifestyle. It's a whole comprehensive system to make sure you're healthy enough for your yogic pursuits. So it's kind of this idea of making sure that the mind and body are stable and healthy so that you can pursue, say, enlightenment or whatever it is that you're wanting to partake on your journey. And Ayurveda is nature-based medicine, so it works a lot with the elements and the seasons and how we can become most harmonious with our natural environment. So oftentimes finding balance is creating that harmony between our natural environment and ourselves through our senses, so bringing in smells that are balancing to our constitution, taste, touch, things that we see, sounds that we hear. So we work across the board, and it's a type of healing system that everyone has their own unique constitution, so it's really not one cure-all for really any kind of illness or disease. So even for the common cold, it's not this is what you take for a cold. It's like, who is the person that has the cold, and where are they at in their life, and what's necessary for their overall healing. So it's definitely a holistic approach in that sense. And you might have heard, if you're familiar with Ayurveda, you've probably heard of the doshas. So that's kind of a way of classifying different people. It's actually also a way of classifying herbs and the medicines used. And the doshas are a combination of certain elements, and then those carry certain qualities. So we work with balancing, so it's curing of opposites. So say someone has a lot of earth element, we would describe that as heavier. However you would describe earth is how you probably describe someone that has a lot of earth. So heavy, dense, more structure, and we would balance that with lighter qualities. So I'll just go into a little bit of that detail. So earth and water are combined to make up the kapha dosha. And so when you mix water and earth together, you get mud. So this is often described as like the mucus in the body, people that are prone to more congestion, and they have kind of the qualities of earth and water. Does that make sense? Whereas people that may have more ether, as you describe air and ether, that would be space, it would be light, it would be expansive, and they're usually smaller framed and have tendencies towards like anxiety and those like lighter emotions. Whereas people that have more of the earth and water are considered to have heavier emotions, like more prone to depression and overweight and obesity. And then there's pitta, which is the third dosha, and that's fire. And so that's somewhere in the middle. So someone who has a moderate frame and oftentimes known to be great leaders, have very sharp minds, can sometimes get overheated and aggravated. And so those are the people that will be more prone to anger and kind of resentment and those kind of hot emotions. So those are just very basic kind of the doshas and how they're classified with different people. So we carry all the elements within us. It's just a matter of the ratio of each one. So does anyone have any questions about that? And it's a very brief kind of description of them, and it's really kind of complex, but it's really coming down to fundamental principles of the elements. So it can be kind of described to a 5-year-old of like, okay, how would you describe water? Like, it's flowing, it's fluid. How would you describe fire? It's hot. it has a transformative quality. So we're looking at how to balance with the opposite. So if someone's too hot, we bring in cold. If someone's too heavy, we bring in light. And we do that through all the senses, through food, through smells, through touch, so going all the way through.
Yeah. And how do you determine which, how would you know if I'm earth or fire?
Yeah.
Would that be because of my size?
It's based on physical appearance and structure, but also kind of deeper rooted tendencies. So in Ayurveda, there's two constitutions that we have. One is the constitution at the point of conception, and that's called Prakriti. And then there's the constitution that we have currently, and that's Vikriti. So we're always working with our current state, although it's helpful to keep in mind what we've come in with. So say someone comes in with a ratio of more earth and water, and so maybe they have larger bone structure, they have kind of like the heavier emotions and physical symptoms, but maybe they've traveled a lot in their life and they've brought in that mobile quality. So perhaps they have a vata imbalance that has, so the air element has come in and influenced them. Does that make sense? So there's a lot of different diagnostic tools in Ayurveda. A huge one is taking the pulse. And so there's actually Dr. Ladd's book there on how to determine the pulse. And so that's working with an Ayurvedic practitioner. They'll often check your pulse to determine the qualities and elements, and it's amazing how well you can really narrow it down and see what qualities are present. And there's also tongue diagnostic, and then face and structure, and then digestive tendencies, sleep tendencies. So just to kind of give other examples, someone who has kapha-like sleep is like they're, and that's the earth and water, they're heavier, they have an easy time falling asleep, they'll stay asleep, they're hard to wake up when they fall asleep. Whereas vata people who have more air and ether, they're very light sleepers and maybe have a difficult time falling asleep, deal with things like insomnia and restlessness. And so you work with anecdoting them. So does that make sense? Yeah. I wonder if we have a little diagram. Actually, I'll grab this book. You can kind of see it's not as black and white as like certain body types are either Vata, Pitta, Kapha, because we all have the combination, but once you start to see, it's almost like these archetypes of like, oh, that's a Pitta person, like they have that fire, they have more sharp, angular features, and they're often leaders, like I said, and they have really good digestion, and they keep things moving, they keep like a fire burning in a way. Sense. So I'll just turn to, I think there's a picture of the body types in this book, and you can just pass it around. And there's a lot of different kind of quizzes too you can take to kind of determine your constitution, but it is best to, you know, work with a practitioner so you can really understand your deeper constitution and then kind of what you're working with now. So I'm not finding that picture, so maybe after we can look through it. So think this is a great book. If you want to learn more about Ayurveda. So for example, I don't know if someone wants to just name out like a current symptom that they're dealing with, and we can just look at it. Or it doesn't have to be your own. It can be dry skin. Or it can be, so something like that would be Vata, because Vata is air. And so you can imagine, what does your skin do when you stand out in the wind? It often gets dry. So air has that drying quality. And so we have to bring in more moisture. So we work with bringing in more water and oils to help moisten the internal and external environment. So it's really quite comprehensive. And a lot of times when people hear about Ayurveda, they hear of the doshas. And people are like, oh, what's your type? Kind of like, what's your sign? And it's not really like that. Like, really looking at the dosha is a very small portion of, like, what you need to know to create that balance. So in Ayurveda, they say when you are healthy, you're living in harmony with the seasons. So you kind of go through the cycle of the year and adjust your foods and the things you're taking in through your senses according to the environment around you. So, for example, in the fall, when the leaves start to dry up and everything becomes dry, we notice our skin is drier. So that's when we would increase oils. And oftentimes there's that cold component high. And we want to bring in more warming foods, more warming spices. And sometimes in that transition of seasons, there can be a tendency for anxiety. So oftentimes we want to bring in more earth element in that transition of season. So for example, in the fall, root vegetables and just being more connected to the earth, moving slower. So we could totally go into this more, but I feel like that's just kind of a little, just kind of bite size of here's Ayurveda in a nutshell, and it goes very much hand in hand with yoga. So there's different yoga asanas are oftentimes prescribed to people with different ailments. So you can also look at the yoga postures of like, does this invoke fire? Does this invoke earth? Or air? Is that what this person needs? But kind of most importantly, or what I wanted to kind of communicate in this talk, is that right now we obviously know we live in a society that's not always in balance with the seasons. We're not always in harmony with ourselves and with nature. And so we can look at that and kind of look at ways that we can connect. And oftentimes it seems like kind of the greatest symptoms, like over across the board, that we're dealing with, it's like moving too fast. Things are just moving too fast. We're all very wound up. We're not exercising properly. We're more sedentary. We're not eating high quality foods. Different emotional struggles because of lack of connection. So these are just looking at, say, that kind of clump of things going on generally. Ayurveda helps to really hone in on how we can connect more to ourselves, how we can slow down, how we can bring that nourishment and in turn nourish each other. So that's what I kind of wanted to share a little bit about today. And a lot of that has to do with generating self-love, as that's obviously a self-care practice, involves love and appreciation of ourselves, which sometimes we can come up against resistance with and for various reasons. And it is an ongoing practice. So, and also just kind of taking into consideration, like, we're up against a lot when we need to take care of ourselves and why we're out of balance, it makes sense when we kind of look at the world we live in. So it's kind of like those little tweaks and adjustments to help move through the world more balanced. Any questions so far? I'll pass out some, these are just a few things I wrote down of how Ayurveda can help us with the self-care and just bringing that connection into our heart. And then there's also a little recipe that I'll share with you after too. So you can take one from the top and one from the bottom. So has anyone heard of Abhyanga? It's the first one on that list, and it's one of the main kind of daily practices that's recommended with Ayurveda. So when looking at kind of the cycle of the wheel, we look at the seasonal, where we are in the season, and then one from the back too. And then we also look down, breaking it down to where we are in the solar and lunar cycle, and then breaking that down even more to like where we are in like the daily cycle. So there's a beautiful wheel that I'll show you in this book. And each day, just finding a way, so breaking it down kind of into the smallest piece of like, okay, the day, how can we balance ourselves throughout the day? And oftentimes it's recommended in Ayurveda to start off with a practice that brings that connection and before going out into the world. So some kind of sadhana, or for those of you that practice yoga, it's oftentimes recommended earlier in the day as well. So the Abhyanga is a warm oil massage, and it can be done with lots of different kinds of oils. Oftentimes sesame oil is recommended because it's very nourishing and it's similar to the sebum on our skin, so it's absorbed really well. And basically you can do it before or after the shower, but it's basically giving yourself a warm oil massage, but it's, the purpose is mostly to move the limbs. So you're wanting to create friction around the joints, and then you'll make long strokes towards the heart. So you can circle around the wrist and then bring, and then long strokes towards the heart. So just kind of clearing the lymph. So we know that lymph doesn't move on its own. It requires movement. So that can be through exercise, or you can even just do it by creating friction around the joints. And you want to make sure that you're massaging up towards the heart to help clear things out. So this is one practice that's just good for the heart in general, increasing circulation, but it's also really good for the skin. And it's oil in Sanskrit is the word snehana, which means love. So the practice of oiling your body is kind of this like loving yourself, thanking your body, creating that connection, and also that kind of protective layer between you and maybe anything you'd come into contact with. Thank you. So Abhyanga is great if you, you know, are going out into a city or into a really stimulating environment or going out in the cold. So it's a combination of things, and it's a really wonderful practice. I recommend trying it. Yeah.
It's just arms and legs.
Arms, whole body, whole body. Yeah, yeah. All strokes towards the heart.
Towards the heart.
And so it can be helpful sitting down, like on the bathtub or like in the bathroom, even on the floor, and you can make friction around the knees, and then you draw, and then you can move towards the heart there. So just strokes up towards the heart. So creating some heat in the body can be helpful, especially this time of year.
So back to Lily's question.
Yeah.
Using an oil that's appropriate for your constitution.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, you're like, so what would that be? So, so just for example, the heavier oils are better for Vata, the people that have more air and ether, because it's more grounding and nourishing, so sesame would be great. People who have a lot of heat need a lighter oil, or if you're doing it in the summer, you probably want to use a coconut oil. And then somewhere in between is sunflower oils or almond oil. So those are pretty like mild, and that can pretty much be used year round. And they do sell these oils at the Diana Center for this purpose too. And you can warm the oil as well. So if you have a little kind of mini crock pot, or if you want to do a double boiler and make cook an event out of it and do it once a week, that can be really nice. And it's kind of shocking how grounding it is to have warm oil on your body. And it's really nice. And especially when you're applying it yourself, it's kind of this practice of like, okay, like I'm nourishing me, and it kind of forces you to move through some of those blockages. And in Ayurvedic treatments, like I said, touch and body therapies are part of kind of all the tools and modalities in Ayurveda. And one of them is a two-person Abhyanga. So you have two people synchronized giving you an oil massage. And it actually comes from like an ancient martial art form called Kalari. So it's like this dance over your body and applying this warm oil that's specific for you. And they can cook in different herbs into the oil, different essential oils, and it's just a lovely thing. So I wanted to share with you guys Abhyanga. And you can receive this treatment or just trying it yourself, and especially in the colder months, it's a really great thing to try when getting out of the shower. And you can even kind of massage around the heart as well. So just like another way to create that connection and just kind of work the heart muscle in that way. So it's kind of what I've also described as this like symptom of our society right now, is a lot of times people are like slunched over, like just the way that we drive, the way that we're at the desk, is like this kind of like contraction of the heart and the chest. So this is also through this massage and just various practices of just helping to lift the chest, just open it more and breathe into the heart. And so that's moving through touch. Moving to smell, we'll just go right into that. I don't have this on this list, but another way to kind of invoke heart opening is through different essential oils, aromatherapy. I don't know how familiar you are with aromatherapy, but rose is kind of like, okay, we all know rose is good for the heart. Also sandalwood and saffron. And so I have a little bit here. If you guys want to just pass around, put a dab on your hand, you can rub it together and take an inhale. And then you can also just kind of put some on your chest if you want. So I'll just pass that around. Birthday girls. And so working with all of the senses, it's like it's hard to, so for example, like, when you smell something bad or you feel like you see something disturbing, you can see how much that affects you. So in Ayurveda, it's like this conscious effort to like take things in, absorb things in that are going to be creating harmony within our body. So smell is another great way to do it. So help yourself to that. Did you have a question? Yeah. And if you don't like it, that's fine too. So along with, so now I'll just kind of move into some tastes and things we can do for our another sensory organ. Rose can also be taken as a tea. I'm sure we know that. But it's really great in combination with tulsi for heart opening, chamomile. Anything that's calming and stress relieving is going to be great for the heart. As we know, lowers blood pressure and lowers heart rate, and so any way we can relieve stress is also really wonderful. And this particular oil is, it says Anahata. I just want to mention that that's the name of the heart chakra, so this oil is designed particularly for that. So just to go into the next one there, I'll describe another Ayurvedic treatment, It's called the Heart Basti, and this is another really unique treatment. I think that, so Ayurveda is kind of at this interesting phase right now where it's making its way, you know, kind of into the Western world, and there's some challenges with that and some really amazing things, but one of the things, some things that are coming through are these amazing treatments, and they're really unique, and most people fall in love with them whenever they experience them. So the Heart Basti is basically a dough dam that's placed over the heart, and it's a medicated herbal milk concoction that's placed actually on the heart, and it's warm, and you just place that in the heart, and then it, you kind of take the liquid out and then you put it back in multiple times with fresh liquid. So you're just like applying this nourishing herbal concoction to the actual heart. And the weight of the Erdal, it's an Erdal paste, it's astringent, so it helps to kind of draw things, impurities out of the skin. It helps to kind of focus the energy at the heart center. So it's a really unusual sensation, kind of like the 2% oil massage. It's just rarely we have things actually resting on our heart that are kind of absorbing herbal medicine through the heart. It's kind of a rare administration of it, and so it's really quite lovely. And a couple weeks ago, I work with another practitioner, and we pair up doing the 2% Abhyanga and then the Heart Basti, and it's amazing certain things that are released in that process. So memories, traumas, blissful feelings, like it's just a really mysterious thing that happens when that space is opened up. And so this is just one way to approach heart opening, heart connection, but a really wonderful one. So I just want to share that with you if you ever have a chance to experience it. It's really quite lovely. But of course, that's not necessary to go through a full treatment, because we can connect to that heart center in other ways. And later we'll go into a little meditation. And as we know, a lot of mystics throughout time have talked about the energy of the heart, and it's kind of, as you know, like this practice of creating that connection again. So I don't know what your relationship is with your heart, but it's been kind of fun playing around with really almost like speaking to the heart, listening to the heart in this way that's like this alive kind of being within us that we get to communicate with. So these practices are just kind of opening up that conversation for our own experimentation and whatever it is that we're wanting to explore. Does that make sense? Okay. So are there any questions about that so far? Or just about how Ayurveda's role in these heart practices? That one? Let's see, for two people or one person?
You would be enough, just one person.
One person. It's around 120. Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the center? Cool.
What's that?
Where's the center?
The Dhyana Center does it, and then there's an
Yeah.
And then my mom actually runs a wellness center in Santa Rosa. So, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead. They're cooked into a milk, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a 2-hour process. What?
A dairy milk?
A dairy milk. It can be, if you're not into that, we can do other milks. But it's in Ayurveda, cows are, you know, rupees. So, milk and ghee are like really precious and used a lot in Ayurvedic medicine, but there's always alternatives. Yeah, so like we wouldn't want to do that for you. Yeah, it's completely different, and you can cook it in oil too. Yeah, so that's really, really wonderful. Yeah, so just a few kind of yoga poses. The bow pose there is really great, and what's that?
Sorry, I was telling you about the baths at Diana's.
Oh, yeah, those are really great too. Yeah.
Take a nice sauna and all that.
Totally.
And imagine that's relieving some of these.
Yeah. Chakras. Yeah, definitely. And using essential oils in the bath too can be really great. So just lowering stress in general. So that, of course, most meditation practices, there's kind of a component of quieting the mind and coming into a place of stillness. So the Dhyan Center, places like that, that kind of help to just kind of release the day and tap into ourselves, and it's definitely beneficial. So, what's that? Okay, so you probably saw me here cuddling, and so we know that it increases oxytocin, but also there's something called ojas in Ayurveda, and that is considered the essence of the kapha dosha, and so it's really great for, it's basically translates to our immunity. And have you heard of the word prana before? So prana is the essence of the vata dosha, which is the air and ether. And then tejas is the essence of the pitta dosha, the fire element. So ojas is something that is good for the heart and longevity. And these words don't matter. You don't need to understand them necessarily. But it's basically that feeling of after a really good sleep and you wake up and you feel rested and revitalized, that's when you know your ojas has increased. Standing under a waterfall or near a waterfall, that's that feeling of prana of like, whoa, okay, like invigorated, life force energy. And tejas, like people who have like this radiant glow, like a fire, like in their eyes, and that would be tejas. So those are some, you know, terminology used. And there's different foods that build ojas, and for like cuddling, sleep builds ojas, nourishing grounding foods. So dates and almonds are ojas building foods. Oil in general is really great for building ojas. And let's see. So any relaxation practice is good for building ojas too. So I don't know if you've heard of yoga nidra, which is a laying down relaxation practice. So it kind of involves scanning the body, and it's considered this really unique state where you're somewhere between wakefulness and sleep. And it's kind of where rejuvenation can occur naturally. So you're in a place of surrender and as deep as you can go without falling asleep. So that's also great for building ojas. So I also have on here the salt foot soak, but a full bath would be amazing too. So that's just gonna bring everything down, relieve stress, increase circulation. And then any breathing technique, pranayama, meditation, just helps to increase lung capacity and also just prevention of heart disease too. So I thought we could get into some practice just to play around with that. And I know there's many things that we could go into with Ayurvedic heart health, but these are just a few. And just kind of that idea of like, how can we take better care of the heart? So just bringing attention and awareness to this part of the body and just seeing how we can create more of that connection. So did everyone get some oils? Yeah. Okay, cool. So you can put your papers to the side, and then I'll kind of go into that, the recipe at the end. So if you want to bring your feet to the floor, and we'll just start by rolling the shoulders back and around. lungs, take a few deep breaths, rolling the shoulders up, squeezing the shoulder blades, and then just releasing down. Inhale, rolling the shoulders back, squeezing the shoulder blades, and releasing down. Inhale, drawing up again, squeezing the shoulder blades, and releasing down. And I'm just circling the shoulders opposite direction, drawing up, rolling forward, and releasing down. Inhale, drawing the shoulders back up and around, releasing down. And once more, up and around. And then just rolling the head once in each direction. So just circling the head all the way around. And just switching directions. And then just inhale, rolling the shoulders back, lifting the chest forward. And then exhale, letting the shoulders come down and contracting. So inhale, lifting the chest up, opening the chest, and then exhale, contracting. Inhale, lifting up. Exhale, contracting down. Inhale, lifting up. More deep inhale, lifting up, and exhale, relaxing. So here you're bringing one hand up to the heart and then the other, so just pressing the hands to the heart.
Oh.
gently bowing the head down towards the heart. Gentle bow. And just following the flow of the breath, just observing it move in and out. Just feeling a softening in the chest. Bottom bottoms of the feet, the tops of the feet, and then slowly bringing your awareness up the legs, back up to the hips, and now to the belly. So just noticing the movement of the belly, notice it responding to the breath. Bringing awareness back to the chest. Noticing again the lungs. And then feeling into the beating of your heart. Focusing your awareness at the center of the chest. Physical heart and the energetic heart. Now imagining here at the center of the chest a golden flame. Visualizing a golden flame at the center of the chest, a steady, strong flame radiating a heat, golden light. Just visualizing now this golden light filling your entire body. Visualizing this golden light coming from the center of the chest, filling the entire body. So visualizing this light filling every body part, every cell, even the spaces between the cells. Visualizing this golden light, this warmth in the chest. Now just visualizing this golden light becoming even brighter, where it's radiating now out through your skin. Just imagining now being wrapped in this golden light, radiating from the chest. Completely surrounded by this golden light, your whole body encapsulated. I'm just feeling into sensations of the body, any sensations this image invokes. Visualizing this loving, healing energy moving from the center of your chest out into the space of your body and the space around your body. I'm just enjoying a few breaths here. I'm just feeling into this love and beauty that you are. Pressing the hands even a little firmer now against the chest. Just sending love and compassion into your being as your hands press against your chest. Today. Just feeling into this generated love. Endless well of love. Taking a moment now, if you'd like, to send any of this loving and healing energy out to a particular person, place in the world. This, like, you can feel it in the space too, like there's something there, there's so much to explore, and a lot can come with creating that connection, especially in a space with others. So thank you for being here and experimenting with that. And if there's anything anyone wants to share, thank you. Yeah, if anyone wants to share, sometimes that feeling of like, oh, I've missed that, or like, oh, it feels hard, there's something that hurts. So, totally welcome.
Now, I told you it was my 69th birthday, so I was thanking my heart for keeping going all these 69 years and being so strong and faithful.
Yeah, that's so
really good.
Awesome. Overflow and continue to spread out. So there's kind of also what part of Ayurveda is teaching us, and just this practice is like, it's really this kind of cultivation. It's like this cultivation of connection, this tending of the heart. And we can do that in so many ways, and kind of starting with basics through the senses. Touch, smell, aromas, different tastes. Different sounds, and just kind of like create an entire environment that we can really drop into. So sweet. I feel really honored to share that with you guys. Does anyone have any other questions about these? I don't know why, like, sharing different kind of, I don't know what feels, what, any questions about Ayurveda you may have? Heart Bhakti is one way, because it's actually drawing things out of the heart. And oftentimes, like, because grief can be that kind of heavier emotion, and sometimes we like contract around it. So again, just like the opening. So like letting it flow. So like maybe that comes in tears, but that's kind of Ayurvedic approach. Yeah. Like, if there's reasons why we shut down, right? It's not like we really want to be walking around the world like this. So it's kind of just that continual practice of like, okay, where's the restriction? And I think when we can feel that, like, sending ourselves loving energy, like, oh, it's not really going there, or like, oh, it's really going there. And so it's kind of that, like, just keep working it. And with the practice of Abhyanga, it's the lymph is actually considered the rivers of the body in Ayurveda, so it's like keeping those rivers flowing, keeping the circulation good. So it's kind of that physical component of like literally we should have good circulation, but also moving emotions out and not having stagnation linger. Yeah. So for example, right now this time of year, it's kind of the last of the winter, so we're obviously it's the increase of light. I think daylight savings is what on the 8th of March, so we're still in that kind of dark period. And come spring, it's when it's a great time to kind of cleanse and release. And so with foods, for example, it's like in the colder months, it's like we're craving the heavier foods, we're moving less, we're sleeping more perhaps. And then the spring comes and it's like, okay, let's clear out that excess kapha, mucus, whatever it may be, and we bring in like the bitter herbs and kind of renew ourselves. So I think we're still in that kind of like hibernation quiet place. Like even being out late right now is probably like kind of getting tired. And so following the cycle of the year with Ayurveda, it's like really just taking this time to go inward before that spring burst. So more time for reflection, more time for like, just doing less, more time for relaxation and kind of comfort and nourishing activities. What's causing the craving, like if it's say like candida oriented, or the sweet. So the sweet taste is, the Ayurveda also breaks down the taste. So the sweet taste is the water and earth element. And so sometimes people will crave sweet taste to like ground themselves if they're needing to like connect. Often, because the vata energy is the air and ether, and so that's what a lot of us are out of balance with. So it's just the movement of the mind, any excess movement. So sometimes it's like to calm down, sweet can provide that, even though of course it gives that energy boost. It's like craving that kind of nourishment. And there's different ways to kind of anecdote it, depending on when the craving is coming and why. So the sweet taste is actually more emphasized in the fall, because so like root vegetables are fairly sweet, and then the sweet taste is less emphasized in the spring because it can sometimes be too heavy. So the sweet taste is also considered grains in Ayurveda and dairy. If that makes sense. I can show you the chart in the book. It might be helpful.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Well, in Ayurveda, they talk about all the six tastes, having all the six tastes present on your plate, and the sweet taste is best to have first. So in our culture, you only have the dessert after the meal, but sometimes that can be that extra like heavy, like, and put the fire of the digestion out. So if you're going to have sweet taste, pair it with some protein to help slow it down and eat the sweet taste first. But like on an Ayurvedic plate, there's all the taste present. because sometimes it can come from depriving ourselves of the sweet taste that we want to eat, but sweet can come in a variety of forms. Yeah! And there's times of day for sweet. Well, in Ayurveda, the biggest meal is often recommended at midday, so you have enough time to digest, and because the sun is the highest, it says that our digestive fire is also strongest, and you probably feel that as well, whereas when it becomes late, our digestive fire is not as strong, so it's not as good to eat like meats and heavier things in the evening. And actually, on the back of that sheet with the recipe, there's some guidelines for healthy eating that are really basic. So, like, this is, like, should be, like, duh, like, sit down and eat, or, like, duh, like, take a few breaths before you eat. But these are things that maybe are not so, like, common in our world. So I think that's what's really beautiful about Ayurveda. It's very simple. It's very, like, come back to the basics. And a huge thing is, like, how to nourish ourselves. So food is an important aspect of that. And I don't know, looking at this list, if anything pops out to you guys of, like, I don't do that, or, like, oh, I'm really good at that, or, oh, I eat in front of the TV, or whatever it is, whatever habits develop for whatever reason. Sometimes these can really help to create those anchors throughout the day of, like, eating, sitting, just eating and sitting, one thing at a time.
Kind of fun to say eat until you're 75% full. How does one actually know that?
Yeah, totally. There's like a little timer that goes, a little like beep beep, you're good.
Yeah, okay. Well,
yeah, or just to have room for like the churning. Yeah. So.
How do you pronounce it?
The OGIS. Yeah. Yeah. So if you, yeah, if you're curious of learning more about OGIS, there's a lot of really great information. Yeah. So. Just to kind of wrap up, there's different mudras on yoga, obviously, to help invoke that heart connection, and some other really great ones, you know, the Anjali mudra, the palms together at the heart, and just even taking, like, maybe before a meal or just a few breaths like this, just bowing the head towards the heart. There's something that happens there. And there's all this research now at the Heart Math Institute and everything, of course, but creating that kind of bridge of the mind and the heart and the coherence that takes place and how we're actually at a higher functioning state when we're, when that alignment's occurring. So this can be really great. And then also a prostration of, like, on the ground, actually with your hands in front of you, laying down. So any invoking any kind of devotion is obviously going to increase that heart energy and help to move out emotions that are maybe causing blockages. Of course, it's like just little kind of tidbits of things, but you can ask any more questions you have. And if you're interested in all Ayurveda, there's so much to learn, and it's really beautiful. And it's kind of like taking us, looking at our lives as if we're like walking laboratories, where we're like, we try things. Okay, what is this balancing for me? Like asking that question: is this balancing for me? Is this nourishing for me? And how can we support each other in that? Because it's not always easy, and we all have our own things we come up against. So, thank you. You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
On behalf of Many Rivers, thank you, and thank you all for coming out tonight. Do check out some of the books over here that Jim has put out for you to look at, and do come back and see us again when the shelves are back in their ordinary position. And for the events I mentioned earlier, there's a donation bowl, or actually there will be a donation bowl out there. You guys neglected to put it out, so...
Thanks, yeah. You're next week.
I would like to come and grab. Yeah. 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 Yeah